to the Sleon Productions podcast, where we interview authors, entrepreneurs, business owners, people that bring value to this world. Excitement, you know, you always hear about Einstein and you hear about Steve Jobs influencing people, and you can say Elon Musk as well. Well, today we have a special guest, first guest of the year for 2022. He is an entrepreneur, a man that started several businesses actually, and a franchise. He's now pursuing a company that provides romantic gifts to hotels. And we got Alex Bowles here on the Sleon Productions podcast. Welcome.
Hey, Santiago.
Alex Bowles. We met at our church, small group, and about a couple months ago, back in, I believe it was May. And of course, I think everyone got to know you because you're very, had a lot of energy, you know.
Sure.
And of course, you know, you're very passionate about your faith and your talents. And of course, you're a father of your of two daughters. So Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, a little bit of a brief bio, and we can get started there.
Nice. I think you hit it up perfectly. So I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a Christian, I'm a father, and those are the things that I really nailed down. Those are the solid parts of my life. So everything else, being an entrepreneur, it is it's an interesting field because we're just basically serving the needs of people. So you got to find out the way that they think, you got to find out the way that they buy, and just provide some good service. So there's a lot of different ways to do it.
So Alex, we spoke before, and it seems like you've come from a line of entrepreneurs. Tell us your beginning, the juices. Who got you into it? Was it a teacher? Was it an uncle? Was it your dad? Tell us that story.
Yeah, so I always, as long as I can remember, I wanted to be an entrepreneur because I thought about owning a business. You're providing a service. You're directly taking care of the people. And that's something I always wanted since the time I was probably 5 years old. And it probably was based on a couple of my, three of my uncles. So pretty much most of my male figures, my father wasn't really in the picture too much, but I had three uncles. One that was a business owner, he owned court reporting schools. He was a big influence. Another owned pawn shops, and another was a chiropractor doctor. So each one of them had different kinds of businesses, and that gave me just a overarching understanding that entrepreneurs are not the same. They're very different, and I could do this my own way, and I have.
Yeah, that's something that I was realizing when I was reading your bio. When you went to Integrity, it was like perfect timing because the iPod came out, and of course they were developing like the whole thing with like iTunes Music, downloading an iTunes LP. At the time, was that something that like that Christian music was really wanting to get into, or was it kind of like, were you one like the first ones to get like their feet wet with it?
Man, I feel like, I think everybody was, the industry in general just kind of reacted out of like, okay, now there's, you know, it went from everybody stealing music. MP3s are a liability. Kazaa, Naps, like all, everything was illegal. So when I felt like iTunes and Apple, Steve Jobs had vision for music to not protect it. And I don't even think his original vision was to become this big music store. I think he wanted to sell a product. Like they sell technology, right? They sell iPhones now and iPads. And so I think the initial back then it was they had the iMac, and I think Steve Jobs was like, okay, we're going to continue the iLine, and this will be iTunes for music. And what he did was he actually gathered. So what happens like in this space is you have the major labels. You have, at that time you had EMI, Universal, which now owns EMI, Sony and Warner were the big three. So Steve did a really amazing job of gathering the three majors and saying, hey, we can provide a platform that can protect the music, you can sell the music, and you can get paid like monthly, which was a big shift. Now the margins were quite a bit different, but the cost to put it out was exponentially different too. So when I came into it, everybody was like, okay, iTunes is legit. There was no streaming. It was like, this is going to be the thing. And the price point is this. So literally when I started, the market share was like this: about 10 to 20% of total sales would be digital, and 80 to 90% would be physical. So it was still like retail heavy. CDs were being sold on the road, a lot of merchandise sales. So that was kind of when I entered. So at Integrity Music, and I think like many others, they were starting to look at catalog and going, okay, we've got a lot of catalog that needs to be on the store. And then also new releases, what do we do to promote and push it? Do we don't want to promote it too much because we want to sell CDs? So there was a little bit of kind of caution. And then also like, we know this is going to be the future, so let's also pour into it. So when I started at Integrity, I literally was in the resource center. They put me in a room full of cubicles that people were calling churches and saying, you know, do you want to buy choral product? Do you want to buy chord charts, you know, song books, all the resources for the church? So I was in that, and I was a little dude in the corner, like digitizing stuff and selling things on iTunes through Sony Music, which Integrity distributed through, and Don Millen was a president.
Alan has a whole lot of energy. You mentioned about fitness, something that if you go to his Instagram, he does a lot of fitness. You recently lost, what, like 20, 30 pounds?
35 pounds.
Yeah, 35 pounds, which was in a month, was that?
Pretty much a month I did it.
Interesting. So, but not just, way before that, he started a Zumba, Zumba gym. Tell us a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah, so in my early 20s, just to give you guys, I came from Brazil, and at that time we had applied for my green card. And when September 11th happened, nothing was kind of on hold. So just like everyone else who's waiting for their paper, I was doing all kind of under the table jobs and things like that. And I remember working, I was bartending at the time, and someone invited me to go to a Zumba class. And I went in, and I always loved dancing. And then this lady was like, I think you should get certified because you're really good. And I'm like, oh, I said, okay. So I went, got certified. And the guy from the gym was like, I will give you a class at 8 p.m. at night. I'm like, bro, 8 p.m. I mean, here in Miami, 8 p.m. works because everything is late. But I was living in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So I'm like, 8 p.m., nobody's going to come to my class. But again, I was a newbie. No one knew me. So 8 p.m. showed up the first day. Four people came. The next time, 5, 10, 15. This is all at 8 p.m. They got to a point where all the ladies that used to come to my class wrote the gym owner saying, like, listen, we're putting our kids to bed and then having to come to work out because this class is so late. We want to move this guy up. So the girl who actually influenced me to get certified was like, you know what? I'm going to give you my class at 6 p.m. And I think that began that my business kind of started in, because my class went from 15 to 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. The gym owner blew up the wall to make the room bigger. I created another class called Brazilian Fit, and I was literally running through all Scranton, Pennsylvania, teaching everywhere, personal training, teaching classes. And one day I just was praying about it, and I kind of felt, I was like, you know what? I know I have the young generation in our city, and I know this other lady who had the older generation. I was like, listen, we're both working for everybody. Why don't we just do something for ourselves? And I think we can actually build something. So we came up with a studio. It was called Studio LA. Her name was Lisa. So Lisa and Alan. And we just literally opened the doors. And from the moment we started, it just went crazy. You know, by the grace of God, I mean, classes were always packed. But I always had I've always had a vision that was not my end. It was kind of something that I knew I needed to do, because then by the time that I opened my business, my green card had came, I had my paper. So then I went to Penn State, and I was doing, as an adult student, I was like, I want to graduate quickly. So what can I do to focus on school but still maintain some kind of income? So opening the studio allowed me to go to school full time, train people in the morning, go to school, teach at night, you know. So for 3.5 years, because I graduated in 3.5 with a bachelor's in business, for 3.5 years I was up at 4 a.m. every day, probably going to bed at 10 at night, but I knew that if I put in the work that it would pay off in the end. And that's how I started my first business, and I was there for, I owned the studio for 3.5 years.
You produce in all different platforms. Mm-hmm. Explain, what do you do when it comes to content?
Well, when it comes to content now, I'm very intentional now, because now, as you said earlier, I now am a host of my own podcast show called Kingdom Talks Podcast. And prior to even getting into an actual podcast, I always was active on social media. I was a lot more active during the times of the Church in the Wild days, because I was helping with creating content for Gio and Doug. So I was mainly the social media guy for that ministry. So I had a heart for it. And then when it came to my own stuff, after I stepped down from Church in a Wild, and kind of, and Church in a Wild kind of in itself dissolved, and it was what it was, and we moved on, and life went on, and Doug got married, and Gio moved, and I moved on, and things happen, and that's what life is, and that's what ministry is all about. Ministry for most is not a forever thing. Ministry can just be a time and a moment in life, a season of your life, and I don't take any of that for granted. I'm very grateful for that. But fast forward to about 2019, 2020, I was entertaining the idea of, like, man, I really do miss doing ministry. How can I implement that online? And I entertained the idea of having a podcast, but I didn't know how to, and I didn't have the space. And so I just kind of talked it up into the back burner. And fast forward to COVID, where you were forced to isolate and think about yourself and what you're doing in life, and the world was shut down. Palm Beach County was certainly shut down. I got hurt. I ripped my tendon on my bicep, got surgery, and then I really had to quarantine to kind of recover from the surgery. And then I just started thinking, praying, and that nudge came back, and that passion started flaring up again. And I'm like, man, I really want to do this, but I just don't know how. And I just felt like God told me to just share my vision with those who are close proximity and those who I hold near and dear to my heart. So I started sharing my vision, and it resulted into a conversation that I had with Pedro, my barber, at the barbershop where I currently record my podcast show. And I just started casting vision, and I was telling him about my concept and what I wanted to accomplish as far as creating content and building a podcast from the ground up. And he told me, bro, it all sounds great, but when are you going to do it? And I was like, oh. And then right there, because of fear, you make excuses. And that's exactly what happened. I just started making excuses. I don't have the resources. I don't know people. I don't know people in that field. I don't have the space. I don't have the camera. The list goes on and on. And Paige was like, dude, that's excuses. You need space? Bro, you're looking at it. And I'm like, what? And he's like, you're looking at it.
You know, barbers are like one of the easiest people to talk to.
Yeah, they're your therapist, bro.
And they exploit.
Louis, and what have you learned about the barbershop industry these past couple of years? I know you probably these past 3 years had to go through the pandemic, but what have you learned so far?
You know, I've been able to learn a lot. You know, number one that I've learned is what I told you about just a little bit ago. It's about the experience. We have to be able to give a customer an experience from the minute they walk through the door to the minute they leave. In between that time, there's a haircut involved. But the experience all around, when they come in, do they feel comfortable in the environment? Do they feel like it's a social environment? Are they clicking well with the barbers? Are we giving them an opportunity to rebook? Rebooking is so important when you're trying to build your books. I've also found that it's very difficult to find good barbers. that's not an easy task. You know, now let's fast forward a little bit here. I opened with 1.5 barbers. Now I have 6.5 barbers. And that was very difficult to get to that point. Now I have what I feel are a really great conducive team that works well together. In fact, we just got a review the other day about a lady who came in to get a haircut, and she gets a fairly short haircut, but the barber she was scheduled with was not comfortable with doing ladies' hair. So she handed her off to another barber and they worked together and did it. And the lady gave us an outstanding review and was in tears when I spoke with her on the phone, because I tend to call everybody that gives us a review. And I just pick random people to call and just ask how they did at the barbershop, because I may not be there all the time. This is my home office, and this is where I typically work from, doing all the marketing and all the behind the scenes type work. So in order for me to keep a pulse on the business, I really need to call clients and see how it went. So when I was speaking to this lady, she was in tears about how well we worked together and how well the synergy was. So I also figured out within the barber industry, there's a lot of commotion. There's a lot of outside noise. And what I mean by that is, if you don't get the right team in place, you're going to be taken over by that outside noise, whether it's drama that shouldn't be in the barbershop to begin with, or whether it's competition because you see the guy next to you as a competitor rather than a teammate, or whether it's somebody who just doesn't feel as adequate as somebody else. So then they start bowing down a little bit and you see them not working as hard or anything like that. So you really got to be able to develop a really conducive team and work well as a team. So I found out a lot about that. Also that marketing is a huge part of this industry. People love before and afters, people love videos, and they love to see those things out there. So when I talk to other barbershop owners, because here's one thing that I've learned in my life as an entrepreneur, is I don't believe that I have competition. Nobody is my competition. I'm my own competition. Okay. So if a barbershop comes to me that's two blocks away from me and comes to me asking for help, I'm going to help them. I don't have anything to hide. People say all the time, what's the secret of growing your business? Or what's the secret of becoming $1 million barbershop, which we are. We're $1 million barbershop, you know, and what's the secret? There is no secret. It's hard work, you know, and it's being consistent. And, you know, people always ask me all the time, so what's one of the biggest things, what's one of the biggest pointers you can give me to growing my books, growing my clientele? And I tell them, number one thing is get involved in your community. Be part of your community. You know, whether it's you that's going to do a community event or you're going to go be part of a community event, be a vendor, be somebody who gets seen, and your community will love you for it. Your community will follow you for it and know that you're doing something good for that community. That's the empowerment that you get from being part of the community. So that's what I tell them all the time. You want to grow your business, make sure you're part of the community. You want to grow your business, make sure you're consistent. Make sure you're consistently giving your clients the best possible experience and the best possible haircut. And you'll see your business grow just by that. Make sure you're consistent on posting online. Make sure you're consistent on meeting people. So I believe that I have no competition and I will help anybody who asks me for help. And there's another thing that I've learned. There's a huge amount of ego in this industry. Egos are huge, you know, and I wish people would get past those egos, because I've got a lot to teach and I've got a lot to learn. So I would love for the people that have these huge amount of egos to be able to teach me. I want to learn too. Every day is a learning experience for me. If I'm not learning something in a day, and every day I write down every day part of my growth process is I journal every day. What did I learn today? And I've got to have something good on there, because if I didn't, I feel like I missed out on a day.
Well, you've written in a few books, four of them. People Are Never the Problem, Development of LADS, Swim Sideways, and The Plastic Coated Leaf. Tell us a little bit about them and how can they find the books?
Swim Sideways is a book I wrote about being aligned with your values. It's a novella. It's a true story, but I changed the names and locations a lot to protect my client, right? But it's a true story about a turnaround in an organization that I had to teach how to use its core values to get aligned. But in doing that, it transformed the culture of the organization, and it empowered leadership to be available to people in ways that let people know that leadership is there to serve them, to provide them with the resources they need. so that they could be the best they can be. And in the long run, that's exactly what the customer wants to experience, right? When they come to your organization, they want to experience a capable person who feels empowered and who has the resources to deliver the service that the customer wants, right? So Swim Sideways is about navigating the rough currents of life and business. We use a metaphor of surviving in a rip current, right? To illustrate Swim Sideways. If you're in a rip current and you're trying to swim into the shore, you're swimming into the current. And when you swim into the current, you're on a treadmill and you're not going forward. You're going to go further and further out to sea. And you won't drown because you can't swim. You'll drown because you're exhausted. So all one has to do is turn sideways and swim perpendicular to the current for about 30 feet, and you're out of the rip current. But how many of us in life, in the rip currents of life, are able to stop and change their mind and innovate and stop doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result? We become creatures of our own habits and fears and anxieties. And we go faster into the current, thinking that we can overpower it. Thinking that if we become stagnant and stationary, passive, that it will pass us by. But the current is going to take you no matter what, as long as you're in its path. So you have to figure out in life how to swim sideways. How to get out of the current, because you're not stronger than the current. So it's a metaphor, but what I find is that when we align ourselves with our values allow us to sort of circumvent currents in life that we can't get out of normally, right? So we go to our values and say, okay, hold on, what's invaluable to me? What's of value to me? My family, my health, my community, my God.
Yeah, because one of the things that I've noticed on your website is rebuilding your mindset. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, man, that has saved my life, right? So when I got back, when I retired from the military, I really faced a lot of demons that I didn't deal with prior to coming out of the military. And at one point, I almost killed myself. I had a gun to my head, the whole nine. Like, I was butt naked, crying on the floor with a pistol in my hand. And if it wasn't for my dog licking me profusely and not stopping, I would have squeezed the trigger and done the deed. That's how close it was. It had to have been the universe that stopped it, because I was there. I was ready. And so I say all of that because I kind of recognized that I needed to work on me. So I went to start going to counseling and stuff like that. But then I got hit by the first car. Nothing changed. I was still drinking. I was still just really just trying to numb my mind. I didn't want to deal with my stuff, right? And then in 2020, I was stuck in ICU for 7 days, no phone, no family, no nothing. And I had to face me. I had to look at the guy in the mirror, right? And when I did that, it was the best situation I possibly could have been in. I actually thanked the guy that hit me, because if he hadn't, I don't know where I'd be today. It changed my world, and it showed me that all of this stuff that I've been going through is for a reason, right? Like, I don't know if you know who Napoleon Hill is, but I love that man. And he says that for every adversity, there's a seed of equal or greater opportunity in that adversity. And throughout my life, I've had all this adversity, but all I could see is the adversity, right? Like, all I could see is the bad stuff in my life. Instead, this time, it was like I pushed all the rubbish away and I saw this little seed hiding there, and I grabbed it. I took it out, I put it in good soil, started watering that thing, put it in some sun, and let it blossom. And it's been the greatest change in my life. And now I understand that without the proper mindset, it doesn't matter what you're facing in your life or where you want to go in your life. You're not going to succeed your full potential unless your mindset is correct. And so now I'm on that mission to really help people become that version of them. And that's where it starts, is their mindset, man. I'm a firm believer in paradigm shifting, and it has to happen if you want to be the best you.
Have you ever had a situation, I mean, you personally, I have, where you meet a person years ago, nothing happened, there was no business transaction, but like, let's say 3 years later, something does happen.
Right.
So it can happen at one of your events. You meet someone, nothing might happen, might not think of anything of it, but 2 years later, might spot you on LinkedIn or tries to call, hey, I remember you, I need help for this and that.
Yep. I mean, it happens all the time. That's the thing, is like, people ask me like, oh, well, you know, you're attending this event, but it's not a real estate event, it's just a business professional, you know, or why would you go here when that's kind of like outside of your field, and I thought you only work, you know, with real estate professionals. And that's not the case, because like, you never know who you're gonna meet. And then you never know who you meet, who they may know, right? So you're always one connection away from, you know, your next big quantum leap. You know, I think it's Grant Cardone has a saying, it's like, the only thing between you and what you want is a stranger that you don't know yet. So keeping that in mind, you know, being open to the fact that one relationship could literally open up a whole, you know, Pandora's box of opportunities, you know, makes every event valuable and every encounter and every conversation valuable. So, you know, I just look to connect with as many individuals as possible and figure out how can I provide value for this person without expecting anything in return. And if you do that enough times, then maybe it will be a scenario where 2 years down the road, that person remembers like, oh yeah, you did connect me and we did do business together. And I see that you know so-and-so and I think you guys would be a good match. Or like, hey, could you do me a favor and connect me with, you know, somebody that I see is in your network. And because you looked to provide value first initially, and if that goes well, you know, it's never going to be a burden for you to ask that person for a favor in return, or they may just return the favor in the best way that they see fit.
Impressive. You know, the fitness industry and sports nutrition has evolved in the past couple of years. How have you seen digital media evolve with this industry? Is it same as the other industries, or this one has a unique touch to it?
It does have a unique touch because obviously, like the Muscular Development name was such a powerful name and franchise that yes, we had our own content, our own spin to it, and that's what even made us stronger. We weren't just like a copy of what was already done, but it was, you know, the name was strong. People wanted to be affiliated with the name for sure. But I see what's happened now is these supplement companies have really become the media. You see this really in Brazil. The Brazilian market is extremely competitive pertaining to sports nutrition and their media groups, and especially when everybody's got their own Instagram and YouTube channel, right? And Facebook channel. So I see that the sports nutrition really just some more than others, obviously some brands more than others, and have been able to capitalize in creating a community. But I think no matter what you're promoting, if you can create a community and have it gather on a platform, a digital platform, YouTube or Instagram or both, whatever, now people are TikToking. But that's what you want to build. We built that originally on Facebook with Muscular Development Latino Magazine. You know, we at one point we were past 500,000 followers. There were all organic. We've never paid for any type of advertising. And so I think that's what's really unique about the sports nutrition market, is they really hone in on their communities. They know who their communities are. They really know how to explain their products, how they work. They know who they're going after. And that's why a lot of times, that's been why Spanish Fitness Media has been very fortunate to be able to kind of hang on to some of the same clientele, because what I've seen is when a lot of big companies, and I'm not going to say any names, but I'm amazed at the misspend of a lot of the American or the domestic side of the agencies that they hire. These domestic ad agencies know nothing about the sports nutrition market. So they're not getting the return on the investment. The sports nutrition companies are just blowing money out the window. So they, a lot of them, the smarter ones, they have brought that in-house. For example, Bang, right? Bang Energy, anything energy related. Obviously, there's been a more focus on the RTDs, you know, ready to drinks, but, you know, Redcon One, Nutrix, you know, a lot of companies have brought their media inside the house because the most of the ad agencies are clueless about the fitness market. They have no idea. No idea. Liquor, cell phones, McDonald's, you know, supermarkets. Yeah, they're on it. But sports nutrition, gym equipment companies are lost. It's like a deer in the headlights. So that's where we were able to grab out some accounts, what we specialize in, the Hispanic market, and connect the dots. I say, well, you know, it was hard when I said, okay, we're going to be agency full service. But I mean, what are we say full service, so it could be up to like 30 services. But what are the core options that we offer? You know, go to Spanish Fitness Media, Instagram. And, you know, I said, well, we are really good at finding a face for a brand. That's a hard thing to do. Yes, you can get anybody to do a commercial, but to do it right and consistently, you want to have, when you're going to do a spend, you need a face for the brand. And that's never going to change. You need a face for the brand that can be promoted into different markets in long term. And somebody who can really know how to talk, have good dialogue on camera, obviously, and know how to post, have a good following, good engagement, but can also do a commercial for Amazon, for example.
Now, going to the closing part of the show, what do you want people to get out of this book?
I think for us, what we'd like people to take away is not just a better understanding of, you know, what has made Messi and Ronaldo so great and ultimately so similar, even though they're portrayed as polar opposites. I think what we hope the people take away from the book is also a larger understanding of the mechanics of European soccer and how, you know, decisions by just a couple of clubs around a couple of players can have an impact that, you know, reshapes and occasionally threatens to revolutionize the game. You know, it was after those years of really profligate spending by Barcelona and Real Madrid that they found themselves in dire financial straits and needing to push for a project like the Super League. So all of these things are connected, and that's one of the main points we wanted to make in the book.
How about you, Jonathan?
Even if you feel like you have followed the careers of Messi and Ronaldo, even if you can kind of recall the times they faced each other and their like most impressive moments on the field, I think that what we hope that this book will do is, you know, really kind of explain everything beyond that, right? Everything off the field. We really hope to illuminate the kind of worlds these guys inhabit, how much they transformed the game, their clubs. They crossed paths with some of the most wild, colorful characters in the game. And I think if you want to really understand modern football, Messi and Ronaldo are like the perfect vehicle to do that. This book really explains where we are, where we are right now, where the game is headed, and you know, how much Messi and Ronaldo have been responsible for that trajectory. So even if you feel like you know their stories, I think there's still a ton in here. And you know, there's been a lot of news that's come out of the book already, but there's just a ton in here that people will learn.
Yeah, a lot of behind the scenes. Definitely recommend the book. In closing, what is the best way to get the book and also your contact information?
The book is available anywhere books are sold. So, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all the usual spots. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Josh Robinson 23.
And I'm at Clegg John, CLEGGJON.